Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Product Coffee, a podcast where product management leaders share stories, advice, and thoughts on all things product over a cup of coffee. Grab a cup of Joe and join us to level up your product career 30 minutes at a time.
Hello, welcome to Product Coffee. Today, Kevin and I are going to be talking about identifying market opportunities, figuring out what new ideas could disrupt the market, how your business can grow, everything small and large. And so with that, just getting started, one of the key pieces for any product manager is I look at the product manager role and say there's a day-to-day thing where you're just managing the development of the product in front of you. You're looking at how do we build this feature? How do we market test it? How do we ensure we're building the right thing? But one of the areas that I encourage all of our PMs to look at is how do these products fit in the market? What is a truly unique market opportunity? And as a PM, I feel like that is a pretty key part of your responsibility that's not really talked about all that often. And too many businesses get you whacked into just thinking about the day-to-day operations. With that, maybe Kevin, you want to talk about how you view market opportunities for part of the product role?
One of the things that I like to think about market opportunity and analysis is like alternative landscape. So if a customer is purchasing a thing, what are their alternatives? And not just look as direct alternatives, but what else are they doing in terms of solving that job? I could get on Riverside and record a podcast with Lou, or Lou can come in person, right? Like that's a viable alternative. There's pros and cons to each, and there's choices that I make for each and why I choose each. That's one of the ways I look at like just the analysis of it. Now, identifying like a gap, I think that's where I'd love to hear, how are you approaching that, finding a gap in the market versus understanding your competitive alternatives?
Yeah. The reason I picked this topic for today and why I thought it was poignant, I'm mentoring a young guy in the start of his product management career. And he's also got some entrepreneurial visions. Mm-hmm. And he asked me a question this morning and he said, you know, how can you... I'm feeling discouraged. I've been interested in the insurance landscape, but I'm feeling pretty discouraged because there's all these incumbent people that are out there, these businesses that have been around for 80 years. How could I even compete? How could I even get into that market? And I took a step back for a second and said, well, okay, let's start thinking about where they're missing. And one of the big areas for me as somebody who had to just file a massive insurance claim this year because one of my houses got destroyed unintentionally. No. Yeah. Fun fact, when you have to do the whole insurance claim process and your house gets gutted. But through that process, I was just like, man, this sucks. Like there is nothing great about this. Like my company I was with went through four like desk adjusters. Like the people who are like supposed to like help you out. And like, so every month it was like starting over from fresh with somebody. Oh, and wow. You just got to sit here and think like, well, where's the room to innovate? Well, it's all over the place. It's about creating a better customer experience. And I'd encouraged him and said, well, let's say you're interested in insurance. Why don't you get out there and interview like 100 people and find out what their gap is? And I guarantee you, more often than not, people would probably tell you, well, the customer experience sucks, or I was processing this claim and it took so long. And from there, I feel like that's how you identify your market opportunities. Mm. You get out, you talk to people, and you really put yourself out there in the user's shoes. And, you know, even as simple things like that's obviously a big one, right? If you want to start an insurance company, you're talking huge investment. But here up in the mountains, I was just like, talking to people and being like, dude, I can't get somebody to come and service my hot tub. What do I even do? And I was talking to other people like, yeah, dude, there's like two dudes in town that do this and they're impossible to get a hold of and they rarely ever show up on time. And literally right there, there's your identifying a market opportunity. It's like, well, clearly everybody's telling me that crystal clear communication for a service is a key market need. Easy ways to reach people, like, could we innovate that? Showing up on time, doing a good job. Like, all these things point to market opportunities in any given space. And if you can listen, put your critical, like, user hat on, you'll find them really fast, I think.
That's interesting. So the finding a gap is identifying a customer need that is being met by a current market, existing market, and understanding the customer pain points with that market. Like, what are the top complaints of that? Totally. That makes sense. Part of the thing you mentioned was insurance, which is, I think, one of the many industries like that, and maybe like health tech. There's probably a whole bunch of other industries like this that have almost like this moat around them because of maybe regulation or maybe because of industry in-depth knowledge. Right? How do y'all factor that in, right? Like, maybe there is a reason why they're market leaders because they've just been enthralled in that industry. They know all the ins and outs, but they're not good product people, but they have all the other stuff, right? How do you think about that?
Well, it's funny. I actually had the opportunity a while ago when I was hiring for a role to interview somebody from Progressive. They were a product manager there, senior PM, and they were looking at a senior PM role at the company I was at the time. And, you know, it was funny. He was telling me, you know, we can come up with a new product, like a new boat insurance product or a new this product. And then basically everybody else will jump on that bandwagon in T-2 seconds. But one of the things that always stood out to me when I was living in California, there was a company for renters insurance that had started up called Lemonade. And I was looking for renters insurance at the time. And, you know, they were just like super easy, you know, tell us about the stuff you own, put it in here. And like their online process to get started was just so user friendly and affordable that I looked at that and I was like, and you know, Kevin, you hit on an interesting point. Like, well, how do you, in these areas that have these moats built around, I ended up finding out that they had basically been underwritten as a company by another insurance company for insurance companies. So it's not like it's impossible to break in. Sometimes you just got to know, like, okay, well, there is an insurance company that provides the underwriting bank financials for people who want to sell front-end policies, you know, and you just get out there and do it. Or I think about, like, there are these supplemental health insurance programs for, like, sports athletes, you know, where they're like, oh, yeah, well, we're going to insure you up to $25,000 or something like that. So if you break an arm, like, we'll basically pay for the deductible against your more expensive health insurance. Or like, you know, something like that. And I found that there are all these like little gaps in the markets for these places that, you know, you can do a little study of the regulation and maybe you just have to find a unique way to fit in.
It's almost going back to, it sounds like this PM is looking for an easy answer. Like they're looking for like, they're probably like, oh, I want something that is like, yeah, I want to crack the code. I want this easy ticket. And it's like, there's a reason why those companies are there and nobody's tried to, you know, and you got to understand that. And I think that curiosity mixed with the drive, the passion of solving a very painful need, that is where I think this innovation can happen, because then it's not just, yeah, it's like, I'm just looking for an in and I know this industry is old, so I want to see if I can crack in. It's like, but you have no context. Like, how are you going to do anything? And then they just give up, right? But I think that passion, the interest, the curiosity keeps you focused on that. And actually, maybe you are one of the people that are the beneficiary, or like you with the hot tub, like you were the recipient of the pain. And so that made you motivated to see a market opportunity and then tackle it, right?
I actually think you hit on the key piece here, which is just the passion to solve customer problems and the passion to do something about it. And I think that's, you know, it's funny, that was something I had in my mind when I was thinking up an answer this morning about, you know, market innovation. How do you think about it? It's like, yeah, you're right. And it comes down to a simple thing. It's like, if you're willing to pursue it and you're willing to be the one to pursue it, and you're going to dedicate your time and your effort to truly understanding that problem, like, I believe every PM should do that regardless of what product they work on, right? Like, if you're at a product organization and your goal is to drive some metric or drive some change or something like that, you need to pursue it with just incredible amounts of passion. Get in your customer's shoes, be living customer research, be trying the product, right? Like, you know, you have PMs out there. How many of you use your product?
Yeah.
Right? Like, the answer is a lot of people is like, no, Like, yeah. I've been
like crazy.
Hard.
It's like,
yeah. I know, right? Like the first thing I did when I joined Xero, and I had used the product off and on over the course of the years, was download the product and come up with a way to test it, you know? Like,
that's the same. Yeah. When I do that, the same thing when I'm interviewing at companies, or a recent one, like if they have a front door, great. I can kind of like sneak in and like see what the product's about, experiment with it, you know, play around with it. And even still, like if that front door, they don't have like a freemium model or something, I'll try to, you know, get in contact with their sales team and see how that process is like, and take notes about, here was my user experience. Like if I was the potential customer, here's what I just tried to experience. And I took notes, you know, around that. So I definitely encourage that, going that extra mile too. But to your point, I think that's what actually drives that market disruption or innovation, that it's the curiosity mixed with the passion and the interest, I think, right? That interest of this solving that problem.
Oh yeah, 100%. I think when you kind of talk like product entrepreneurship, this is a fun kind of also anecdote. I was talking to another friend, and he was telling me about a restaurant idea that he had had. Mm-hmm. Or like he was saying he had an idea for a restaurant, and I was kind of probing him further, like, well, what's the restaurant? Like, what's the cuisine? Like, what's the style? Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, I haven't really shared my idea with anybody yet because, you know, it's a really good idea. I don't want anybody to steal it. And I was like, dude, if you're the one with the passion to pursue that, I can tell you can tell just about everybody your thought for an awesome restaurant and a location and what you're going to do. And I can guarantee you basically nobody will do anything about it, you know? So share your idea, because that's also part of market testing, right? Like if you got an idea for a product or idea for a service and you're interested in disrupting a market, like one of the first things I did when I was doing the hot tub business was just post it in Facebook groups. Like, hey, anybody interested in, you know, maybe having another hot tub service provider up in this neighborhood, you know, be interested in taking on a handful of clients, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Right. And I would tell people about it, like, hey, yeah, like, you know, I'm thinking about starting this, you know, I would be kind of gauging the reactions. And a lot of time people were just giving me the feedback like, yeah, I need, you know, we need that. We should try it. And then it's like, okay, but then you've got all that feedback and now you got to do the hard part. And it doesn't matter whether you're PM for a bigger company or a smaller company or doing your own startup, which is turning those ideas and that feedback into actionable items and driving the innovation. Because the only way that you're, okay, so there's a point where you're like, I tested the market. I thought about it. I understand that there's a gap in this, that there's a gap here. I've maybe conducted some additional research to like verify that. And now it's a jumping off point. What are you going to do? You know, are you going to pitch your CEO a radical new idea of how to take your product in a different direction? Are you going to tell your GPM about a new market opportunity discovered? Are you going to put your money where your mouth is and go hire an attorney to draft up a contract for you and create an LLC and like, you know, actually like get after it?
That's so true. I feel I've been on the other side of it though. And I think it's like the terminology is the wannapreneur,
entrepreneur.
Yeah. It's like, I always want to do this. And I've been a part of that too. And, you know, I straddle the line because I'll have a big, you know, vision or appetite in my mind and then have a struggle starting things because maybe you'll get too in your head with that. But what you're saying is like, that's what everyone is doing, right? They're looking at that. They're saying, oh, well, they're doing it, so I'm not going to, right? But that there's that one company that is doing it. But there's always markets where there's like five companies in competition or even more, right? Like, and who's to say that, you know, you can't. Don't let that stop you. But if it does, maybe that's not the right thing, right? Maybe that's it. I don't know. But if you're getting frustrated with that process of like, hey, you know, every time I try to come up with a product or try to go build this business, I can't identify those why I can't, right? Is it the opportunity? There's no fresh ideas. Everyone has an idea that explored it. Well, yeah, but who's actually done those things? Who's actually sought that through to fruition? Who's seen it to completion? So like when you have those ideas, concepts in your mind, set also a target of like, you know, this aspiration is good, but if I'm choosing to go pursue this, here's what my exit criteria, here's my investment of my thought, my process into that concept, right? It's going to be, I want to see it through to launch. And no matter what, if people copycats, whatever, I'm going to still see it through to launch. And as long as I do that, then that's my goal. And then I can reset my next target to say, well, do I still want to do it? Do I want to pivot it? Do I want to do something else? That helps you kind of like those short goal settings, like will really help you make progress instead of staying in that stagnant entrepreneur stage, right?
I want to touch on something that you covered, which is like, well, What if there's a lot of people doing it? What if there's like one person doing it? And, you know, I always think that you can approach this stuff from a, I'll call it a mindset of abundance and a mindset of growth, which is if you look out there and you see like, you know, 10 businesses all trying to do the same thing in your space, that means there's some legs on it, but it means that no market leader has evolved yet. Right. So what could you learn about what it would take to be the market leader in that space based upon what everybody else is doing? Right. A fragmented market means there's opportunity to become a market leader. And then if there is a market leader, I think, you know, one of the most dangerous positions for a company to be in is for a company to achieve market saturation and then be fighting for that last like 20% of the market. Right. You know, I think there's a point where Cisco was kind of like this, where they had kind of become the dominant player in the router and switch game. Mm. And, you know, they were just controlling the market. And then it was kind of like, well, what do you do? But the thing is, there are all these other companies that came out of the woodworks that were like, hey, but here's where they're missing on this, right? Mm. Here's where they're not doing this right. Here's where their customers would probably love this as like a feature or a function or something. And so they were looking at that market leader and going, yeah, but I could take back some of that 80% if I only did this, 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 and this, right? So as long as you look at it, you know, every indicator in the market tells you something. Mm. You know, you can, a big company there, why is it successful? Where is it going wrong? How could I take away some of their business? Markets are fragmented. What if I, you know, went up around here and just bought up all the hot tub companies, you know, like in... went and got some big amount of VC funding and just went and bought everybody out. Like, I don't know, just to be interesting.
I think there's two things there. So there's like the strategy around what, almost like what chess move to make, right? As far as your business and your product. But I also think from zero to one, it's really just honing into a problem to solve that is painful for somebody.
Yeah.
And even if there are solutions for it, and I'll go through two scenarios because I've seen it in both B2C and B2B. But in B2B, you know, I've talked with huge oil companies like the Conocos of the world, and to say like, what was the last thing? It was just a user interview question, but it was like, what was the last thing that your IT department had spent money on? And it wasn't the first time. Like, you've tried to solve that problem multiple times, and you know, you're not happy with the current solution. And you know, they came into the interview with a solution in mind. It was way different than what we had talked about. But what they said was, we're using Microsoft. One of the Microsoft like Looker kind of products. They were like, and we spent millions of dollars on this and we haven't been able to fix this and get it to where we want it because of XYZ, right? And then give me a laundry list of missing, you know, features or customer complaints that they have with that existing market. That market is hugely saturated, but we have a willing customer that has a, you know, burning problem to solve. It could be in a niche, whatever. Solve that problem for them. If you focus on that problem to solve for one customer, where you see, you know, your product vision of, you know, potential longer term result, but still focusing on that burning need, that is where this market creation happens, right? This is where that could be hugely beneficial to the B2B sector, even if it is saturated, because what they're saying to me is that I'm in this industry, I've tried to solve this problem many times and I'm pissed off, right? I don't have a clear solution. Yeah. And they're basically saying like there's products, but then those products don't really solve my need 100%. Bingo, let's go fix that, right? Let's go help them, right? And then I think narrating with that focusing on that customer problem, when you build that relationship, that bond with that customer that has that burning need, then it becomes personal and more interesting to solve versus on the onset that I haven't talked to anybody and I'm just assuming there's a gap, right? It's like, I don't even know. Go talk to somebody. Go solve a problem for somebody, right? Like, that's where you can really see some magic happen. And then on the consumer side, like even with things like, you can be amazed with where people have been frustrated that they could not figure out, find the exact solution that they need in their mind. It's a little difficult because you still have to understand on the consumer side, well, is there a long-term market for this niche? But again, focusing it on solving for that one customer pain point. We had a guy that was like really wanting to, he didn't have the right alarm clock. It's alarm clock. That industry's been around for forever. He's like, well, I don't want my phone in the room. I don't want my phone in the room. But I want all the functionality of it, you know, and I like to keep my phone in another room because, you know, we like to keep the bedroom phone free or whatever. And, yeah. But it, you know, the other alarm clocks I found, they are not dimmable enough to all the way down to where it's like very little bit because it's so bright. And so like, it's not infinitely dimmable. And so it's just a laundry list of things that are a gap for this person, but you can imagine because it's such a burning need for them, they've tried to solve this multiple times. Other people are probably in that same boat and have that same need. And so, you know, one, if you're a maker, your ear should perk up and say, let's go make this thing for this person. And then, you know, fuck it, whatever. You know, it's just like, let's just go solve this need. And then what you can say, step two is like, hey, if we solved it and they love it, oh, okay. Now, who else, right? That could be interesting. But I think like what some product teams get tripped up though, so, right? Like they stop. They're like, well, that's not marketable to everybody, right? It's not this widespread adoption product. And then they kind of have like this washing of the really awesome solution, right? It's like, well, but what if they're this? What if this problem comes up? What if? And then it's like this huge conglomerate of mess that like ends up not actually solving something for somebody.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I really like that you said there is like, you talked about being a maker. And I think there's a spirit of that, that every product person should embrace, whether or not they're, you know, truly capable in some of those crafts or not, right? Like, but I think embracing the concept of being a maker and solving a problem is actually something that's massively important. So I kind of give you an example of like, if you identify that market problem, you know, let's just say it's a simple one. You know, you're like, hey, you know what? I wish there was a pizza shop in town. I think there'd be an awesome opportunity to like, you know, to do that, right? Like, and you believe it and you market tested it and you just sit in here. It's just like, okay, well, why don't you go rent some space in town and, you know, be the guy? Or why don't you figure out how to MVP it and like, you know, get a, like there's there's a couple, they own like kind of like a food truck almost, but the way they did is they just have this wood-fired pizza dome thing on a trailer and they set up a pop-up tent at all of the town events and they'd be out there making wood-fired pizzas for people at this town event, right? Like, and I had a conversation with her and she was just like, yeah, like I'm really like passionate about doing this. Like I really thought there'd be a need for this in town and, you know, we don't have the money yet for like a permanent location, but you know, I still wanted to get after it. Right. And they just went and did something, right. Yeah. You know, didn't even have to have a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, hell, get in your garage and like, you know, an idea of something I've wanted to experiment with is like kind of building these cisterns that have integrated pumps and things. And I was like, oh yeah, like I'm going to just like rig up something on a pallet in my garage and some PVC and like regular odd extension cord and it's going to be fun. Like,
you just
got to get out there and try it or design something, right? Like get on Upwork, hire somebody like for $20 and just, you know, or not $20, but you know, however much it is, describe to them what you want to build, whether it's a website or this and get a design for it or get it like an MVP, like even as a product, like you can embrace like that maker attitude of, even if I don't have the skills to do this, how could I get them?
Yes. Yes. You know? It's a roundabout way of like answering this market assessment question, but I think it was a good kind of explosion of that thought process and some other ideas to think about along the way. Is there like, and I think, you know, the distinction of maker from a 0-to-1 startup-y mindset versus like, you know, there's room and there's different frame of minds of like the GM or the, you know, enterprise PM versus a maker, right? And sometimes they overlap, sometimes they don't, and that's okay. It's just different mindsets. But like if you're looking to bust into a new market or create that entrepreneurship venture that's been eating at you, it's like that's more around that maker kind of side versus the making a strategic move.
As we're finishing up the coffee, what are some takeaways, some homework you got for everybody? Kind of
just start, quit ideating and just start. And I think what I mean by that is like, if you are sitting at your job or, you know, you're burnt out or whatever, and you're like, I've been wanting to start something and I don't quite know yet, blah, blah, blah. Quit saying that. Go and talk to somebody, go and talk to a potential user, buyer, customer, whatever. just have a simple user researchy type of conversation with them. Ask them about if it's a B2B enterprise, or you can hit two with one stone. If it's a friend of yours, you know, you can ask them some consumer challenges, and then you can also ask them, hey, what do you do for work? And then, oh, great. What was the last time, you know, you guys spent money on something and had to respend it again? Or, you know, ask some variation of that question and just get some context and knowledge. I mean, the information's out there. All this stuff is out there, and it's a conversation away from the next innovation for you as a maker. And it's that simple. Get on the phone with somebody that you haven't talked to in a while, shoot the shit, catch up with them, and then ask them about these things and grab them a beer, whatever, right? The stuff isn't out of reach. And I think it's like, be comfortable enough with having those conversations to understand it and try to rethink your approach to making if you're stuck in this phase.
I'm going to encourage everybody to come from a mindset of abundance and creativity where you look at any market and instead of trying to find all the reasons why you couldn't break into that market, why you couldn't disrupt it, you start for looking for all the things that you could do to disrupt it. Mm. Right. Like it's a big mindset shift to, you know, stare out the window and be able to look at something and go like, you know, my truck is dirty as hell right now. I wish somebody would come here and, you know, and wash this off. Right. Like, yeah. Oh yeah, that's a great business. Let's see how big it is. Right. To, oh, you know, somebody designed the ideal size trailer. Who knows? Like, you know, it can be all like everything can be in front of you. And you just have to look at it and see the opportunities and coach yourself to see the opportunities and think critically about those opportunities. Yeah. And then if you find something that you're like, yeah, I could be in on this, then do exactly what Kevin said. Yeah. Write down, get started, put something together. And this can be even for the company you work for, right? Like, look out there. You saw some opportunity in the market. You thought about how you could compete against a different person. Write it down. Turn it into a strategy deck, a presentation, share it with somebody, take some action and go from there.
I did like that, like what you said of just even sharing the idea out to gauge feedback is super helpful too. Are you getting reactions of like, why would you do that? Or are you getting reactions like, oh, that's interesting. And then they're adding to it, which I love, right? And it's like when they're kind of like, oh yeah, and you could do this and then you can do this. Then it's like, oh, maybe you have something interesting there. Can kind of shake the dust off your idea a little bit more and give you some more, you know, validation for those things.
Cool. Well, with that, I think we finished up our coffee. So go level up.
This has been Product Coffee, produced and engineered by me, Kevin Gentry. You can now record a voice message and send us ideas or topics to cover, and who knows, we might end up playing it on the show. You can also become a supporter of Product Coffee by contributing a monthly donation to help us sustain future episodes. Please rate, review, and subscribe to Product Coffee on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.